Welcome to season 3 of Conversations with Coaches. This is a stakeholder-centered coaching production where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. I'm Brandon Murgard, your host for the show. This season, we go deep into the case study library to discuss the real-life challenges of leaders and the coaches who help them succeed. As an added bonus, we're giving away the latest installment of our case study library, which includes case study summaries, show notes from each episode, and ways you can connect with the guest. Get your copy today at mgscc.net/case-studies. In this episode, we're thrilled to feature Paul Crick, a distinguished coach known for his transformative work with leaders in highly technical fields. Today, Paul takes us through his coaching journey with a senior product leader striving for leadership's excellence. By combining the systematic approach of stakeholder-centered coaching with the benchmarking power of the Leadership Circle Profile Assessment, Paul and his client embark on a path of profound personal and professional growth. Join us as Paul shares his insights and the strategies that led to the remarkable success and development. Come on in and let's find out more about the client.
So the client was a manufacturer of advanced electronic components to manufacture components for electron microscopy to sell to vendors of equipment such as MRI scanners for medical applications. So advanced scientific equipment is who they are. And the situation was simply that strategically they recognized that there was a need now to grow the business in this specific area. So they'd been very successful in one area. They'd had this other product sort of in research and development. They got to a point where they had some initial traction in the marketplace and were encouraged and recognized that they now needed to grow the revenue base and saw this as an opportunity to do that.
And were you working with one of the scientists putting together these products? Were you working with someone in a business function?
I was working with the product management lead, so that really the business lead for that area. So he reported into, he had an interesting reporting line in that he had a dotted line to two more senior managers in the product management function, but they sat more across the portfolio of products that they had, whereas this individual was looking after this specific business area of electron microscopy.
Mm-hmm. And how about, when they reached out to you, was the organization the one that called? Was it this particular leader that was looking for support?
I was invited in by a fellow coach as one of their associates and introduced to this person. And we did the stakeholder management piece that was all around, well, what's the context? What are we trying to do? Why are we doing this? Why are we offering to support this particular individual with some coaching, and what are the outcomes that they're hoping to get from that, both as a business, his particular executive sponsors, and for him as well? What did that mean in terms of professional progression and also in terms of personal development and growth?
An area that coaches will frequently ask about is how do you navigate that very first conversation with the client where you're explaining stakeholder-centered coaching, what their experience is going to look like. So what was that like for you when you first sat down, you've been invited, and now you're talking about stakeholder-centered coaching and what you intend to do? What did that conversation look like?
So it was several conversations because these things never happen my experience is it's never happened in one specific conversation, but it's really a case of listening more than talking until you get to a point where you've sort of agreed the engagement, you've agreed that in principle you want to move to a stage where you explain that the actual stakeholder-centered coaching approach. What was slightly different about this was we were putting a leadership circle profile at the front of this to really get to a diagnosis of, okay, so what are the underlying reactive tendencies that are pulling back on the creative competencies that lead to effective leadership? And then putting, once we knew that, we were able to use the data to then say, well, where is the one big, what's the one big thing you really want to take out of this, develop, agree that with the stakeholders and say, well, this is what the leadership circle's profile is showing. There's two or three development areas. This individual wants to look at this, thinks this is the right place to go. Do you agree, yes or no? Get to a point where you've negotiated what that but one big thing is, and then set the course and say, right, now we're going to do a program of stakeholder-centered coaching. This is what that looks like. These are the supporters that are going to support this individual through the process. And here's the steps that we go through in terms of teeing everything up and then moving through the process of actually doing the coaching work, getting all the feed forwards, doing the quarterly measurement of, you know, how things going, is progress being made.
Mm-hmm. So when you first walked in the door, they didn't know exactly what they were going to work on. They just knew that they wanted to grow the business, and this leader was.
Yeah, I think the issue was in order to help this leader to grow to their next level, there were some behavioral things, some natural reactive tendencies that were being overused as strengths that were causing some friction that was not helping the business to go in the direction it wanted to go at the pace it needed to go, and also were causing this individual, you know, some stress, some grief, and therefore there was a need to sort of find a way to say, okay, well, what's the diagnosis saying? What do people perceive as the issues? What do you perceive as the issues? And how does that stack up into then set a course and set a context and then a course within that context to say, right, which way are we going to go? What are the things that are really going to help you in terms of progressing in the direction you need to?
So when you first got to meet the leader, was your read of them that they were eager and excited for the coaching? Were they apprehensive? What was your take? What was your first impression when you first met the leader?
They were really honest. So I was impressed because they said, you know, they didn't really know what coaching was. They weren't sure it was for them. Why do I need this? And we had an honest and open chat about that. And as we know, you know, the start point is getting a commitment and buy-in that they're going to, that the individual who's taking part is, you know, act with courage, humility, and commit to the process before you even sort of set off down the runway. So we had, I think we had two or three conversations around that, you know, gave him some time to reflect. We said, well, this is what it looks like. This is what the process is. This is what coaching typically does and how it helps and supports and the sorts of benefits you can get, but it's always individual for the person, or, you know, for the collective, if you're working with a collective. So, but we got to a point where he was willing to take the first steps for sure.
And, you know, thinking through his feedback, what did he ultimately pick as the one big thing they were going to focus on?
So it was around his communication, and it was his overuse of the strength of sort of wanting to be in control and drive things, and therefore to not listen as attentively as he might do to all the voices in the room before then making some pronouncement as to this is the way we're going to go, or this is what we should do next, or even asking the opinion of his team, you know, how do we do that? That what should we do next? You know, being less, I'm going to use the word autocratic, and much more collegiate and collaborative in his approach, but through his patterns of language and his natural ways of responding in situations where he would, for example, he'd listen to a meeting and he'd be saying things like, well, why am I sat in this meeting here? Why do we do this? Because all I do is I sit and listen, nothing happens, and it's just a waste of my time. You know, it was trying to help him think through how could he reframe that and how could he actually use it as a platform. You know, if he's being asked for a newsletter Yes, okay, that at one level you could say that's an administrative task, but at another level it's an opportunity to share ideas, invite feedback. So it was around that kind of communication, those communication issues, and in particular the sort of emotional reaction of getting frustrated and, you know, seeing the red mist and then not just temporarily not being responsible for what came out of his mouth, which we all do. You know, I've been there many times myself. So it was just helping him do that. So, yeah, really it was about his communication behavior, to think about his patterns of language that he was using and to work on that.
Okay, we've done a leadership circle profile. We've picked our one big thing. You know, what after this point, what does it look like to be coached by Paul?
I always say you'd have to ask my clients because it's kind of different each time. But in terms of following the process, you know, it was community, choosing a group of people to support him through the process who were willing and able to do that, and then taking him through that process of getting him to think about different things. So one of the interesting thing was he's an Italian national, and so certain concepts, you know, he was already working in a second language, and certain concepts like humility. So humility came up in the conversation very early on. He says, "Yeah, I really don't understand what that means. Can you help me understand?" And so I put a little micro course together that took, I say micro course, yeah, it was basically curated some content that sort of said, well, watch this video, read this article, and read that, and listen to this. And then let's have a conversation about, do you have a better understanding of what humility is? And do you feel you could now put that into practice? And so a lot of it is real time. So we do a coaching session where, you know, so what's the feedback forward you've got from your people around you? But what are the things you don't understand that, you know, you might not say to them, but because we're in this co-created coaching relationship, and this is a place of psychological safety, you can feel comfortable about doing that. And I like to think, and I think he would say, you know, his eyes were opened and he was surprised about one or two things in terms of the things he learned. And I, you know, some of my background, well, look, a lot of my background originally was in neuro-linguistic programming. So I could give him some practical techniques. So one of the things I did was, he said, oh, how do I stop myself? You know, how do I stop this red mist thing? And how do I, you know, I sense this thing in my body and this tension. What can I do? So I said, okay, get an elastic band, stick it, wear it on your wrist, and just be mindful when you feel that tension, just snap the band against your wrist. Because this part of your wrist is really sensitive. You don't have to, it doesn't take much to actually create a stimulus that actually breaks the pattern, the physiological pattern of that rising temperature. Does that make sense? So we do little practical exercises like that. And I taught him some basic anchoring techniques and then some language patterns to help him reframe some of his responses.
Yeah. Okay, so you set out with, you know, here's a structure we're going to follow, and then you're a bit reflexive along the way to say if there's something we need to dig deeper into, we'll go there. If we need to bring in some other tools or techniques, we'll look at that. What other techniques did you use with this individual through their journey of coaching?
I think it was just getting him to think about how his language patterns were landing. So he would like a lot of us do, you know, we would say yes but, and it was kind of like, okay, let's do yes and, let's just practice yes and, let's just play. And it wasn't so much me telling him, it was more a case of, would you like to play with this, would you like to experiment, would you like to see what happens, and treating it as more as a game to say, you know, this might work. What's going to happen? I don't know. You don't know. Should we find out together? Rather than saying, you actually need to do that. You know, do this, and things will improve. That didn't work. He was a really, really responsive to that. And he'd come back in, you know, where we would meet, and he'd be like, oh, you know, I was really surprised that that worked, and it's really helpful and it's useful, and I never thought of that. And you go, great, you've learned something that's useful. Now just keep using it. It's like a muscle. You know, you keep exercising, it'll work. If you don't, you'll lose it.
So do you find that this type of experimentation is a common practice in your coaching?
I like to think it is, because I don't know all the answers. It's difficult to walk into a coaching situation and go, right, I know I'm going to do this, this, and this. Because all the time I'm trying to listen for what the individual needs, or where the individual might have a block. And sometimes I'm guessing. Sometimes I'm trying to mind read. Yeah, so I'll use language patterns like, I know that you think I know this. And by which time, you know, the brain's completely scrambled. But that's deliberate, because I want to open them up to a point. And you might say, well, that's manipulation. You go, well, no, it's not. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to interrupt their normal patterns of thinking. You know, I'm trying to mess with their head in a really constructive and positive and in a compassionate way. This is, can I get you to a place where you would be willing to come to the edge of the cliff and at least look over the edge, and then go, all right, well, here's a parachute and I'll come with you and let's do it together. Let's jump together. And do you want to play? And I think that kind of playful approach, and I know it from my martial arts training, as I've gone through my own training. You know, when you do the first flip, and or you're thrown by a seventh dan black belt, and you learn the difference between being thrown on the mat and thrown through the mat, you know, that until you experience it and until you create a place of willingness to play. I mean, last night we were playing, there's a particular technique where you literally get launched about 6 or 7 feet across the mat, and you have to flip and land safely. And it's really, really scary when you do it for the first time. But I was working with a partner, and I said, look, I haven't done this. So if I tighten up and I'm not relaxed, that's what's going on. Yeah, I need to do this a couple of times. And then, by the end of it, it was like being on a fairground ride. It's like, woo, can we go again? That's so much fun. And that's what I'm trying to do with my coaching clients. I'm trying to expand their zone of comfort in a way that, yeah, it has consequences, but they feel comfortable about them and they're willing to go there. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, I see such a strong parallel between coaching martial arts and coaching leaders. I mean, there's huge amounts of courage, huge amounts of humility and discipline that go into the practice of any martial art, but you're a full-on coach of martial arts and you're coaching executives. How else, or maybe I should say, what other skills do you bring from one domain over to the other?
It's really fascinating how most of what you learn if you take all the locks and throws out of it, everything else is development of how you would develop a leader and how you would do that. You train as an individual, you train as in a training pair, but you also train as a collective. And what becomes, you know, we talk about discipline sets you free. And when I first heard that phrase, I was like, yeah, right. Don't believe any of that. And yet it is so true. And, you know, the fact that you practice, you know, I find it amusing that you think of any elite sports team. You know, you wouldn't go into the Kansas City Chiefs and go, guys, we don't need team coaching anymore. It's fine. We're good. You know, and yet you walk into any business and it's so fascinating that you have to convince people. And yet they will sit down with these sports people in a conference and go, oh, tell me your stories about sports. So there are so many things. Attention to detail becomes a thing. How you show up in your attitude, how you work with a partner. You know, I've used wooden swords in a coaching situation where I've been asked to say, help my people step up. Well, if you've got a sword coming at you quite quickly, you step up pretty fast. You do it in safety, of course. But the point is you demonstrate things that happen on the mat in a way that can then very easily be transferred into a working environment. So I always, you know, I always say, you know, it's a different mat, a different dojo, but it's the same lessons.
Mm-hmm. Well, I believe you've also taken this idea of the dojo also to your own podcast, the Pocket Dojo. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And what kind of things do you discuss there on your show?
So in 2019, Forbes reported that the global investment in training leaders was $366 billion around the world. And you have to look at that and you say, well, all right, that was pre-pandemic, pre-Ukraine, pre the situation, the various geopolitical struggles that are happening around the world. And you have to say, there's a disconnect between what happens in the places where the training happens and what happens back out in the real world. And I think what I get a sense that you may have a different perspective, and people listening to this are welcome to argue, but the perspective I have is that we talk about leading and leadership practice. We talk about the what a lot. You know, what is it? It's traits, it's qualities, it's this, it's that. Great, that's a useful debate. And you know, if you go on Google and do a search, you can find an extraordinary amount of hits that you would need several lifetimes to get through and sort of get your arms around what that is. What I'm more concerned about is the how. And so let me give you an example of that. So we all know that there's a gap between a stimulus and response. And the longer you create the gap, the more time you have to make a decision as to how to respond. And it's the same on martial arts. You know, when you're faced off with a sword, then what we teach is delay for as long as possible. Don't move until you absolutely have to, so that you can see that your opponent is completely committed. Because once they're committed, they can't not. You've then got their energy. And therefore, it's the idea of the pocket dojo is a dojo is a place you practice. It's as simple as that. And therefore, it's very much about the how to. So we're trying to put things on the dojo that says, you know, so I do little videos that says, think about this for 2 minutes, you know, try this as a practice. And we're trying to give people stuff to do rather than, I mean, the articles are very, very worthy and they're very thought provoking, but we need to do more in terms of practice. Because if I say to you, show me how you do emotional intelligence, it goes quiet because everybody is, first of all, thinking about it, and they go, yeah. That's like trying to answer, how do spacemen stay up in space? Why don't they fall? You've really got to think about it. And so I wanted to create a place that was trying to be practical, that said, here's some practical things you can do. And that's the idea. And you carry it around in your pocket, basically, because it's accessible via your phone. My wife's idea. My wife's idea, I have to say. Credit where credit's due.
We'll have to tell her, give her our gratitude. And ladies and gentlemen, you can find that at the Pocket Dojo. You know, coming back to this leader, what happened? You know, you coach this leader, goes on for about 12 months. You've run some experiments, built some skills. What kind of results did you notice at the end?
It was interesting because to begin with, the initial sort of willingness to participate, which wasn't grudging, but it wasn't sort of wholehearted commitment. We saw, you know, it's sort of the scores bumbled along and the feed forward sort of repeated itself. It's like, this person needs to do this. And we said this to him last time. But by the end of it, we'd moved the needles to a score where actually he'd resulted in getting some new business written, and also had, as a result of his efforts, managed to earn himself a pay rise, which was good. So, and the scores were good. His team around him were much closer in terms of accepting who he was, how he operated, and how he was now interacting with them, and being willing to listen and open up more and ask questions rather than just give answers. So the actual scores had actually moved up quite considerably.
And when you say they are willing to accept the way that he operates and such, just so I'm clear, this is not, okay, yeah, we're resigned to this. It is, he has grown to a place that they're quite satisfied with the way he operates and they're quite willing to follow his leadership.
Yeah, absolutely. It was more, yeah, this person has learned, has sort of gone through a process of sort of waking up, cleaning up, growing up and showing up to a point where we can have constructive argument. And the purpose of that conflict is to get to a better answer, not to shut the conversation down because this person got irritated or taken their bat and ball home and gone, I've had enough. I can't attend to it right now. So I got the sense that the conversations were much more productive and had moved to a point where actually they were pulling together more as a team and they were more connected as human beings. You know, they say psychological safety is the absence of threat is one way of looking at it. I prefer Gabor Mate's definition, which is, you know, it's the presence of human connection. And I got a sense from reading the commentary on the final surveys that connection was starting to build at a deeper level than where we were at from the outset.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's clearly learned quite a bit from you. Let's talk about what kind of takeaways did you get from having coached this leader. What were your key learnings?
I think my key learnings were, I have to do stakeholder management and I have to do it really well. So working with one client is one thing. Working with the people that support him as well adds a layer of complexity that perhaps I had underestimated. And therefore, my learning around what it taught me was how powerful this method really is. You know, they talk about when you plant a rose in a rose bed among, you know, bushes and hedgerows and other plants, if that rose doesn't thrive, you don't shout at the rose. You kind of look around at the, and you fix the environment as much as you work, you know, you trim the rose and you try to help it to grow. And therefore, you definitely saw this symbiosis going on of, yeah, well, you work with the stakeholders and actually you're, to some extent, you're coaching them. As well as working with that. So I got a real sense of that. And it really turned me on to, wow, this is such a powerful approach to really making, yes, it was 12 months, but actually I sense that if we just coached the individual, we may not have made the progress that we actually did make in that time, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. What else? What other big takeaways did you have having done stakeholder center coaching in this environment with this particular growth area?
I think the primary one was this as an approach. Yeah, I think it's cemented. It's one of the key approaches I now use within my coaching, wherever the situation enables it, and even where the context doesn't naturally lead to that. So I was with a group today and it's all about, okay, so how do we build this collective connection? How do we help everyone support each other? How do we create this sense of stakeholders and then put stakeholders around people and then use them to give feed forward to help individuals and teams develop and grow? And it's like lifting each other almost, as opposed to just sort of shouting one person and say, get on with it. You know, it's your responsibility, get on with it. And life isn't like that, as we know, and we know it intellectually, but until we get into onto the mat, for want of an expression, then it doesn't become clear. So I think it clearly showed me how I could integrate it into the majority of my practice.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned compassion earlier when you were talking about applying some NLP techniques. In your mind, what role did compassion play in this leader's success?
My sense of compassion, as I understand it, is how do I see that the individual in front of me is not their behavior? How do I get to a place where I can do that and go, you're not your behavior. You have all the potential in the world. You have all the resources inside of you. How can I help you? And then trying to explore that's how I I do fine. I wish I could say I do it all the time and I'm perfect, but I'm not. That's where I'm trying to come from. It's this person is doing the best with the resources they have in any particular moment, and they're not their behavior. And I find that's a helpful start point for me, at least, to kind of go, okay, that takes me to a slightly more compassionate place, to not want to be attached to the outcome. I must get the client the result that the sponsors want or they want. It's how do I just help that particular individual at this moment in time? Take one step forward. And again, we talk about that on the mat. You know, what's the one thing you're going to take away from this training session that makes you better? And as we all know, 1% every day, 37% in the year. So.
I asked this largely because stakeholder-centered coaching, as you know, is very structured. It's very milestone-driven. You know at the beginning who's involved where, what their role is, what the outputs, what the deliverables are. And so if I'm a coach applying stakeholder-centered coaching, what advice would you have for me to take a more compassionate approach while also keeping in mind the deliverables, the milestones, and the timelines of the engagement?
So I was, for me, don't be attached to the outcome. It is the first thing. And what that does is it opens the gates to not being a guard dog or a police, you know, a policeman. Like, oh, well, it's 3:30 on Tuesday and we said we'd do this and this is the process and, you know, robotically we have to go through it. We become wedded to a process. It's kind of trying to, you know, there's lots of ways of encouraging your children to go to bed on time and to follow their bedtime routine. You can either be dictatorial or you can make it fun. And I try hard to find ways to lean towards the fun stuff. Doesn't mean I won't have the tougher conversations of, well, you know, we expected to get some feedback. You know, what happened? Why didn't it happen? You know, it would be more questioning about, rather than you didn't do it and creating shame, to say, okay, help me understand what prevented this from happening. And, you know, what were the roadblocks? And what was it? Was it something within you? Was it something in the stakeholders? Who else do I need to go and have a conversation to go and clear some roadblocks for you, if that's the case? Or if it's you, help me understand what's going on. You know, what's going on inside you that caused you to hold back or distance or, you know, turn away from the thing you needed to do? Because, you know, there's times we don't want to do stuff because of stuff that's going on inside us. And sometimes we can't articulate it. Sometimes we don't have time to articulate it. And sometimes we just need to be witnessed to be able to say, yeah, I know. Hey, I didn't do it. I should have done it. It's kind of like, I should have got up at 6 o'clock this morning, but I didn't. I got up at 6:30. Why? Well, it's okay. Nobody died.
How about if I'm a leader and my organization is saying, hey, it's time to grow your side of the business. There's areas that we're going to need you to improve. What advice would you give to someone like me who is facing this similar mountain that your client has? You know, is coaching going to be appropriate for everyone? Is there a way to, you know, determine that myself? What would you say?
I think my answer is people need to want it. I always tell the story of my next door neighbor when I used to live in West Yorkshire. I'm a bit of a music nut, and I converted my garage into a music studio. It sounds glamorous, but it was a place where I could go and fiddle with wires and cables and knobs and guitars and musical instruments. And my next door neighbor turned 13. And of course, when you're 13, your interests change. And he was starting to get into music. He knew I had a music studio. There was this knock on the door and he walked through the door and he got a guitar in his hand. It was his birthday and it was his first real guitar. No strings on it. He had a guitar, a pick and some strings. And he sat down and he said, will you teach me? And I go, that's the kind of client I want. So you have to want it. You don't need it. Nobody needs coaching. It's the old joke about, you know, how many people does it take to change a light bulb? You know, like one, but the light bulb's got to need it. It's an old joke, but it's very, very true. You have to want it, and there has to be a driving force to want to do that. And sometimes you get pressured into things, and sometimes it's difficult to own up and go, actually, I don't want this. This isn't for me. This isn't right now. I need to do something different. And some people don't always have the space, the time, the courage, or the support to be able to voice that. So my start point is, do you want it? Then my next question is, for what purpose?
What do you do in a case when someone doesn't seem to want it, or even worse, if they profess to want it, but you're not quite seeing that with their behaviors or their actions, you're not sensing that commitment?
Well, again, people aren't their behaviors, so I'm willing to take some first steps. But if it becomes really clear, then there comes a point where there's a need for a conversation to say, look, this isn't working. I get a sense of that. Do you get the same sense of that? And 9 times out of 10, they will say, yeah, this wasn't what I thought, or I'm not ready, or it's just not the right time. And then I'll say, okay, so should we agree to not work together until you are ready? And that's okay by me. Is that okay by you? And then move forward with that.
Paul, if people want to get in touch with you, follow your story, check out your podcast, where could they go?
So I'm most active on LinkedIn. So please, if you're interested in connecting and saying hello and just having a chat, then it's Paul Crick on LinkedIn. I think there's only me doing coaching. And then the Pocket Dojo, we're on YouTube. So you'll find us there. And you'll find us wherever you get your podcasts, and the main platforms. You'll definitely find us on Apple. You find us on Spotify, on Google, on Amazon, all those sorts of places. So
today's journey with Paul Crick unveiled the profound impact of dedicated coaching on leadership development. Through the lens of a product leader's growth, we've seen how listening and strategic development can catapult a leader's effectiveness. We hope you're inspired by today's episode to explore these strategies in your own leadership journey. Remember, all the case studies of this season are available for download at mgscc.net/case-studies. The link can also be found in the episode description. And if you'd like to better understand the foundations of leveraging stakeholders and measuring results in your coaching, then join the free training program, Foundations of Stakeholder-Centered Coaching, where we share the philosophies and frameworks that guarantee improved leadership effectiveness in 12 months or less. You can register for the free course at mgscc.net/foundations-course. Until next time, this has been another episode of Conversations with Coaches by Stakeholder-Centered Coaching, where we believe everyone deserves a stakeholder-centered leader. Thank you for joining the conversation, and stay tuned for more stories of leadership transformation.